Want to drive greater success in social commerce? With Deloitte's latest creator economy research, you can. After surveying over 500 creators and 500 brands, our insights are helping CMOs and marketing teams harness the power of content creators. And not only that, but how to do it well. See for yourself by visiting cmo.deloitte.com today. Your website is the front door of your business, but the way teams build and optimize it is broken. Stuck between inflexible templates and cumbersome code-dependent solutions, there's a better, faster way. Enter Webflow, a visual-first platform that empowers you to create freely. Now you can ship web pages in weeks instead of months and save millions in development costs. These are the real results for companies like Orange Theory, one that I love, Dropbox, and IDEO. Get started today at webflow.com. Webflow, more than a website builder. So the first brand in your life to have a great impact on you?
By far, it was Coca-Cola. There's no question. No question about it, whether it was in Spain where I grew up or in Puerto Rico. And then both Burger King, which was stronger in Puerto Rico where I was growing up than McDonald's. We didn't have a lot of money at that time. And the first time that I went to a Burger King, my grandparents invited us, and I will never forget that day in my life.
Hi, I'm Jim Stengel, and I help major brands find their purpose and activate it, and the profits follow. For 7 years, I was the global marketing officer for Procter & Gamble, where I oversaw the marketing of hundreds of brands. You may not know it, but the CMOs, the chief marketing officers of all of your favorite brands, are trying to connect you with your favorite products and services through purpose. And on this show, I delve into how they do it. This will be a different kind of show. My guest today on the CMO podcast is Antonio Luzio, who is simply one of the greatest CMOs who has ever lived. He began his career at P&G, spent 12 years rising at PepsiCo, and went on to the top marketing jobs at Visa, HP, and then Meta, formerly Facebook. Last spring, he was inducted into the AMA Marketing Hall of Fame alongside Mark Pritchard of P&G and Mukherjee of Pernod Ricard and Bozum of St. John, formerly of Netflix. Antonio is now the founder of 5S Diversity, focused on building capabilities in marketing transformation and diversity and inclusion. He is a board director at Express and VidMob and an executive fellow at the Yale School of Management. Antonio is a friend, and this show will go to places we normally do not explore. Spoiler alert, the dark side of leadership. Here's my conversation with a native of Spain, Antonio Luzio. Antonio, finally, welcome to the CMO podcast. You and I have been in similar circles for a few decades. I was checking before you started at P&G 2 years before me, and we're in similar phases of our life right now. We both left corporate CMO jobs to pursue something we're passionate about. We're both affiliated with great universities, you with Yale, me with Kellogg. We both have grown children, and we both have one grandchild.
That's right.
So I just wanted you to start with, what's great about this phase of life for you?
Jim, what's great about this phase is that I basically have the blessing of only working on projects that I feel very passionate about, and frankly, spending time only with people that I want to spend time with. And that has fundamentally changed my life. My wife, Ashley, will tell you that I spend as many hours working as I did before.
Me too.
But I'm enjoying it. And I made some changes, which means I don't work at 5 a.m. in the morning anymore. I don't work out at 5 a.m. in the morning anymore. I schedule my workout, you know, during the day when I have a different time slot. And it's just great. It's a great time.
Do you miss anything from corporate life?
I do. I miss two things, Jim. And I'm working on both. Number one is the getting out of my office,
yeah,
and running into people and bouncing off ideas. Although I'm involved in boards, I'm involved in mentoring and teaching, I have a capability course and all that. It's that's the one part that I miss. And the other piece, and I never thought that I was going to say this, is I do miss international traveling. I was a global marketer for many, many, many years. I've traveled the world pretty much like you do. I don't miss the crazy number of travels a year that I used to have, but getting into a different scenario with people from different cultures and different and overall different environment to try to solve big problems is something that I miss as well. I'm working on both of those issues, but overall I lived a very rich and meaningful life and I'm very happy with it.
I'm the same with you. I love the international travel. I was doing too much of it, but we have to be intentional, I think, I have found in the kind of life we're in right now. I need to plan much more about how I'm going to get out. Where am I going to, you know, when I was doing this podcast live, I was in New York every week with people across the table. Now we do it all on Zoom. So, you know, getting into New York every week and sitting across the table from someone, you know, I would find other things to do in New York. I would appear at different places. I'd visit other companies. You just have to work harder at it because it doesn't happen as serendipitously as it did when we were in corporate life.
Yeah, the other piece was, you know, when I was in corporate life, you like to think that you're managing your time, but you're not.
No.
You're following a process.
A rhythm. Yeah.
You know, there's a rhythm. There's a annual operating plan, strat plans, people planning, country reviews. You know the drill. When you're not, you have to be. I think the word that you use is the right word. Significantly more intentional in the way that. You're spending your time. The other thing, Jim, and I now I get a lot, like you, I get a lot of questions about it. I think you and I follow the same approach, which was by the time that we were done, we just amplify things that we were already doing.
Yeah, that's right.
It was not like we left the corporate world. Let me think about what I'm going to do next. And most of the people that I know that have gone through that piece, they spend a year or two, sometimes even depressed about it.
Yeah.
You had a plan, I had a plan, and we had planted those seeds way before, not the last year, way before when we left. And it was just about amplifying the stuff that was already there as opposed to figuring out what to do next.
When you left Facebook about 2.5 years ago, you released a video where you shared your wisdom of 40 years, and it went crazy viral. And we're going to put a link to it in the show notes. I don't think anyone has ever quite done anything quite like that, Antonio. In fact, I was just the other day speaking to a very experienced CMO, and she told me she goes back and watches it every few months because different things occur to her. It sort of grounds her. And I just loved it. I talked to you after you did that. It's so full of lessons, and it is profoundly personal. And you share what you call the dark side of leadership and its impact on you, your family, your health, physical and mental. So I'd like to go back to that video. And the first question, Antonio, is why did you decide to do it?
Jim, I love our craft. I am profoundly proud of what we do. You know, building brands that stand the test of times through hopefully teams that stand the test of time is something that I found a lot of meaning, personal meaning on it. And my leadership journey was something that I devoted a lot of time and effort in it. For many, many years, I was taking my different teams during the companies that I worked at, to Aspen, to talk about the personal leadership journey and to be very intentional about the fact that being a leader is not techniques as to how to act like a leader, but it starts with you, who you are, what you care about, what is your purpose, not the business purpose, your purpose as a human being. So that was something that I had done with all of my companies all the time, sharing both my personal and my professional journey because they were indeed integrated. So the moment that I decided to leave the corporate world, I just decided to share with the world messages and lessons that I had shared with my companies. So it was kind of my little contribution for the leadership, for the CMOs of the future, because I do, like you, care a lot about our craft and the next generation of leaders within our craft. I just decided to focus a bit more on the diversity and inclusion angle of it, and trying to bring more women and people of color to senior marketing roles in global companies. But that's the reason why I did it.
It, as I said, it's very personal. And was it difficult to go back? I mean, I talk to a lot of people who write books, and sometimes it's a little bit painful to go back and retell a story that was hard at the time, or did it just roll off your tongue?
The moment that I decided to do it, and how I wanted to do it, it just became natural. I've never hidden away from my story, the good, the bad, the ugly, and the extraordinary of it. And anyone that, like you and me, that have been lucky enough to have long and meaningful careers, you go through all of it. You go through good, through bad, through ugly, and through extraordinary, all at the same time, sometimes, even within the same day. So, you know, I think it's very important to share that story, because leadership is hard and leadership can be lonely, and there are amazing things about it. I cannot imagine my life without being what I was, but acknowledging the fact that it's hard and that you can feel lonely about it, and that you're going to have to struggle, that you're going to have to take stands, that you need to figure out when to take a stand, that you need friends and community and you need mentors. It's something that we need to be a bit more open about it. Sometimes we place leaders in these pedestals as people who know it all, who have no fault, who have no weaknesses, that have no doubt or hesitation. And then we're all surprised when they fall. You know, the truth of the matter is that we're all human beings, and that leadership is just an extension of our humanity, and we have to embrace all of it.
What's resonated the most from that video? What's been the reaction over the last 2 years or so?
It's been rather interesting, because different parts of it resonate with different peoples. The more senior you are, the more personal, emotional sides of the video resonate. The more junior people were more about a conversation that you and I had at the time, you know, the need for different leadership styles, mm-hmm. At different times. The fact that particularly when you're outside of the consumer good world, most of your time you're leading from what we call leading from the middle and leading from behind versus leading from the front. When you're in the consumer good world, you spend a lot more time leading from the front, because you're a revenue generating function, because the P&Ls are built around brands and or categories, because most of the CEOs are going to come from the revenue generating function, of which marketing is one. Outside of the consumer good world, a lot of the time is you're sharing the agenda, therefore negotiating what's in, what's out, how do we measure performance, how we're going to resolve roadblocks becomes very important. So the more, let's call it, the more junior people that were seeing it, those were some of the parts that resonated with them.
If you remade that video now, if you've been into a studio to reshoot it 2.5 years later, would anything change?
No, I don't think anything would change. The key messages are the key messages, because that's who I am. I think there's significant opportunity, because I got lots of calls on, can we double down on this element? When did you know that you were going through this particular phase? I think it would probably would have been a series as opposed to one exit interview.
Antonio, how do you recommend to young people today are rising in their careers on how they can study leadership.
What would you say is the key to success for today's CMO? If you said data, you wouldn't be the only one. At Deloitte, however, we believe data is only half of the equation. The other half, story. Because data is the language of business, but story is the language of humans. And we believe the most successful CMOs know how to harness the power of both data and story. To learn more about Deloitte's CMO program and how we can help today's CMOs succeed, visit cmo.deloitte.com. Your website is the front door of your business, but the way teams build and optimize it is simply broken. Stuck between inflexible templates and cumbersome code-dependent solutions, there's a better, faster way. Enter Webflow, a visual-first platform that empowers you to create freely. Experience a CMS where you can build dynamic content without code. Native localization that lets you translate your site in one click to reach global audiences. And third-party apps and integrations so you can build faster. Now you can ship web pages in weeks instead of months and save millions in development costs. These are the real results for companies like Orange Theory, Dropbox, and IDEO. Get started today at webflow.com. Webflow, more than a website builder.
And become better leaders, advance their leadership styles. There are a lot of people at P&G who invested in that in me, both formal ways, informal ways. You had the same experience. You know, you were at Pepsi and P&G, both academy companies, to use that term. Yeah. So what? How do you recommend to young people that they can do this so they can develop their full leadership potential?
So one of the biggest observations during my 40 years in the business world, as I looked at leaders, CMOs and C-suite and the CEOs that I was privileged to work with, is that for the most part, successful people have four things going for them. I stumbled upon them. I did not have the system. And I was lucky enough to be able to have support on two out of the four. The first one is capability on two levels. The functional, which is the obvious one. And by the way, I have not seen a lot of need in that area. Most companies actually do that. It's digital now. Let's bring some digital training. It's the metaverse now. Let's make the it's data now. It's martech or adtech or whatever it is. And we'll do that. It's the leadership part that we're lacking. And even when there is present, women and people of color don't get their fair share. And there's ample data to support that. The second one is community. I don't mean community inside of the company, although that helps, but I mean community outside of the company. It is people that have your job in other companies and or industries where you can reach out for best practices, for perspective, for even avoiding the feeling of isolation that sometimes we feel the first time that we've gotten a leadership job. I mean, we have all, and I can tell you in my program, everyone's like, they have gone through periods where you literally look at yourself in the mirror and you go like, am I crazy? What, this does not make sense. And if you don't have that external perspective of people that says, actually, you are crazy, Antonio, so move on. Or you have a point there. And by the way, I've suffered through that and in my company. So community is really very important. Then the third and fourth are related, but there are separate points, Jim. Mentorship and sponsorship. Mm. And mentors, I define once again, of people outside of the company, people that get to know you really well, that get to know you as a human being. And these are the people that are going to give you the same thing, perspective, best practices, are going to ask you the tough life questions about purpose, about balance, about are you where you need to be given what you want to do? And then the last piece is sponsorship. Sponsorship is inside the company. And what I found is like all of us, you, me, Indra Nui, Sheryl Sandberg, all the people that I had the privilege of working with had stretch assignments. Stretch assignments, by definition, is an assignment where your potential is much higher than your capabilities. Someone is betting on you because you have potential. You don't have the skills for this particular job. You're going to learn those skills. That's what a sponsor does. A sponsor is not there to have coffee with you, although it's nice when they do. The sponsor is the one that is advocating for you. What I found out within my space is that when it comes to women and people of color, stretch assignments are called diversity plays. And it drives me crazy. Because by definition, if you're diverse or non-diverse, you are not ready from a capability standpoint for that job. Someone is betting on your potential. So it's not that one is a career development play, as we call them. I'm giving Antonio a career development assignment versus, oh, Jim is a diversity play. I did have companies, two great academic schools, like you said, P&G and PepsiCo, that invested on my leadership journey. I did have sponsorship of people that actually gave me stretch assignments. I did not have a sense of community outside of my company. I did not have mentors. I found this too, Jim, on the last, let's call it my last quarter, my last 10 to 12 years. The community started with diversity. So it was like I was getting together with a lot of the people that you know to talk about diversity, but that became just the seed. And when I found both of them, fundamentally my life, not my career, my life changed. I became much more balanced. I enjoyed my job significantly more. I had more perspective. I no longer had the feeling of isolation that at some other points in my career I did have. So that's when I'm talking to younger people, that's what I said, you know, being intentional about building the leadership capability, the community outside, the mentorship, and then the sponsorship, and you will be significantly more successful than if you don't.
So you had two of the four coming up. When you think about sponsorship, it's a very powerful concept. Who is the most meaningful sponsor for you as a rising leader, Antonio?
I had many at different points in my career, but I will have to go back to Mike White at PepsiCo. He was the vice chairman of PepsiCo and became the CEO of DirecTV. And when I got sick, when I had to deal with my bout with depression, he was the guy that told me, you got to keep going and you need to create a new set of behaviors and practices for you to get healthy. He had some family members that had gone through it. So I was incredibly lucky and he continued to push my career forward. So when I look back, I've had amazing leaders. Indra was an amazing sponsor of my career as well. But I would have to say at the moment that I needed it the most, the one that trusted me, my potential, despite of what I was going through, was Mike White.
In the context of these four things you just shared, if I could wave a magic wand and Antonio Luzio of 2023 would be the executive coach of Antonio Luzio 2003, what would he work with him on? What would he tell him?
I would tell him, trust yourself more. Everything is going to be okay, even when you fall. Begin to build a community outside of your environment, because it will make you stronger and your life richer, and build relationships with mentors that are already around your life. And people tend to be incredibly generous of spirit. That's what I would be telling myself.
I said in the introduction that you're a GOAT. You're a greatest of all time. You're one of the most remarkable CMOs who have walked this planet. So I'd like you
Wow, I wouldn't. Coming from you, it's like the best thing I've heard in a long time.
And the data supports it, my friend. It's just not my opinion. The data supports that. But I would like to know, would you have done anything major differently in your career? And the answer can certainly be no. I mean, I think that's probably how I would answer that. I probably would, I would have worked in Asia on the ground. That's something different I would have done if I did it again. But how about yourself?
I would do it all over again. I would have just been significantly much more aware. And I would have taken significantly better care of myself, much more aware of the signals of life and health. But other than that, I would have done it all over again. I love our craft. Our craft is a very meaningful craft. It is under siege, particularly outside of the consumer goods world. And it is up to, that's one of the things that I keep hammering down to my community and to the people that I work with, that we need to constantly renovate the value that marketing can provide. And it's not obvious, and it is significantly not obvious outside of the consumer good world. And I think that sometimes we miss the fact that the reason why brands are important is because brands are the way to build sustainable businesses that stand the test of time, and to be able to show the impact of the work that we do within the scope of the business is more important than ever. And I think that outside of the consumer good world, we're forgetting about that. We like to talk about brands. We like to talk about awards. We like to talk about creativity. We like to talk about Cannes. We like to even talk about purpose. Nothing, including purpose, can be discussed outside of the scope of the fact that we fundamentally exist to build the business and to build the business for the long term. And I think that's something we need to recapture.
I totally agree with you. You've used the word craft several times so far on this show. Why do you use that word to describe what we do?
I think it is the best combination of arts and science that I have seen of any of the business function, perhaps outside of engineering. Engineering also has a very beautiful, creative side to it. And to me, the idea of being a craftsman, of doing things with excellence, paying attention to every single detail of what we do is something that resonates with me very much. Having said that, when you actually own the chair of the CMO, being a craftsman is what makes you different, but being a craftsman does not earn you the seat at the business table. So that means that being fluent in the language of business, being able to talk shop with the CFO, with the board of directors, even with investors, mm-hmm. Becomes an impressive asset that great craftsmen need to be fluent of.
What was the most memorable day in your career?
Wow, I've been blessed with having many wonderful days. I think when I was promoted to CMO for the first time, it was something that I really wanted, but I didn't dare to admit it to myself and especially others, because I didn't think that I had it within me to actually do it. I remember that when I was approached the first time, my boss at the time, who was the president of the international division of Pepsi Cola International, approached me and I said, I don't think I could do that work, that job. And he said, why? I said, well, the person that had that job was doing it very differently than the way that I was going to do it. The fundamental difference was that he actually came in as a senior leader. I came from the bottom up. I knew country, two regions, global. So that my perspective was fundamentally different. It was like the global team as a service center of the field and not the other way around. So it was going to be a major, major shift. And he looked at me and said, what you're missing is the fact that the moment that you own the chair, you own the agenda, and you can play it any way that you want it as long as you deliver the business goals. And after I was able to accept myself within the context of that chair, I think it was, it felt like a great accomplishment.
What was the worst day of your career?
I think probably the hardest day was, I had just joined PepsiCo because I wanted to be a general manager like most consumer good guys and ladies want to be. I had joined PepsiCo from Kraft to do that sooner. And 3 months in, there was a gigantic business meltdown. All the investments that the company had made, mostly in the international divisions, didn't pay out. It was hundreds of millions of dollars lost in shareholder value. And I was new to the company. And at one point in time, Jim, the international division had over 150,000 people. 200 of us were gathered in London on one day. We were the only 200 people in the entire division that knew that they had jobs. And we had to reorganize the company, reduce headcount by 54%. I will never forget that number in my life. And then execute against that. And as a new, young leader, I was faced with facing 8 people in 2 horrendous days in 15-minute slots where you were going to tell them whether they were going to have a job, and that was the job, and they had 24 hours to agree to the exploding offer. The second group of people were people that were in the transition mode where they may or may not have a job, and then the third group were people that were going to be let go that same day. And I was not equipped to actually deal with that. I remember our boss, and they brought in specialists and to do everything in 15 minutes. I told them I'm Latin. It takes 15 minutes for me to say hello. I don't know how I am going to do that. And I did learn that when you're going through a situation like that, people on the receiving end only want answer to the question, what's going to happen to me now? And the sooner that you get to that answer, the better you are. I think that was probably my darkest day ever. I didn't sleep that night. That was my hardest day. Sorry for the long-winded answer.
it's a very helpful story, Antonio. As you think about what your perspective on CMOs is pretty rich, right? You've been in the role in several companies. You've coached people. You have a company now helping others. If I were to ask you to describe characteristics of a fulfilled, successful, happy, thriving CMO in 2023, what would those be?
Well, the first thing is that a successful CMO is a business person first and a marketing craftsman or artisan second. I cannot underestimate that. Number two, it's a Renaissance man or woman, or some people call it the Leonardo da Vinci model. What I'm trying to say is someone that is as comfortable in his own skin with numbers and data as it is with creativity. In fact, the Leonardo da Vinci analogy is a beautiful one because he couldn't answer whether he was a mathematician or a scientist or an artist. Everything was part of the same continuum. I think that's needed more than ever. This division that we've artificially created, mostly outside of the consumer good worlds, that you have the creative people and then you have the data. I'm actually banking that the new generation of marketers already comes with that because it's needed. It's needed more than ever. The third is a global mindset. This understanding that, you know, through technology, we can access any country at any moment, and that you have to leverage talent and trends and ideas from wherever they come from. And that mindset means that you feel very comfortable dealing with cross-country teams, with people from different cultures, backgrounds, ethnicities. And the last piece, which I think is probably the most important one, is the, you know, the speed of change accelerates. So resilience will drive your life and your career. There's no question about it. You will fall, you will clean yourself up, and you will keep pounding. That's the only way, the only way to do it, and to see failures as learnings, and to see risk as the way things are, and to be able to build characters through all those experiences. That's kind of my model.
And Tony, I want to move to the creative brief, and I'm going to stick with the GOAT theme. So the first brand in your life to have a great impact on you?
By far it was Coca-Cola. There's no question about it. Whether it was in Spain where I grew up or in Puerto Rico, although Puerto Rico became a Pepsi country when I was a teenager. And then both Burger King, which was stronger in Puerto Rico, mm-hmm. where I was growing up than McDonald's. We didn't have a lot of money at that time. And the first time that I went to a Burger King, my grandparents invited us, and I will never forget that day in my life. So those are brands that were very present.
Greatest campaign or initiative you have ever been a part of?
I think probably I will have to say Invisa, the Go World campaign, which was a campaign that we kept it for several, which had never happened before, several Olympic Games. And one of those beautiful projects that build the business, build the brands, and even won some awards on it. So it was a beautiful work.
The greatest leader you have admired, whether it's someone inside a company you worked with or outside?
Oh man, I've had the privilege of working with many. Early in my career, my first boss in P&G Puerto Rico was Carlos Rom. He's still around. He's a professor in the University of Puerto Rico. He taught me what marketing was. I thought that I wanted to be a lawyer at the time. So he actually saw a potential in me that I didn't see in myself. So if I'm here today, I owe a great deal to him. At Pepsi, you know, Craig Young, he's also an ex-PNGer. When I was working in Latin America, then Mike White, then Indra Nui, who was my direct boss for about 2 years. I've been blessed with many, 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 many great leaders that were right for me at the right time. There were others, Dion Wessler at HP, that just allowed me to fly. It was almost like you do your thing. I've had many, and then I had the privilege of working with both Cheryl and Mark, that I learned all sorts of other stuff as well.
Greatest book you have read?
Wow. Wow, 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 wow. Probably Viktor Frankl's Man in Search of Meaning. I think the concept of logotherapy, or, you know, dealing with your traumas by working, resonated a lot with me. The story that man, even when it's stripped from everything in our life, we still have a choice in the way that we want to live and the way that we want to die, resonated a lot with me. Then I would have to say, on the literature side of it, on the fiction side of it, Love in Times of Cholera, Garcia Marquez, because I'm a romantic at heart.
Love it. Greatest advice you have ever gotten?
Stand up and keep fighting.
Best advice that you have was... given? Stand up and keep fighting.
I think so. Yes, that's true. You know, clean yourself up and keep going. It's okay. It's okay. You learn a lot. You learn a lot on this one. You won't make this mistake again. Just keep fighting.
Greatest thing you're looking forward to in 2023?
Keeping my family healthy and happy, obviously. Then I on the professional side, I hope that our craft comes out of this challenging economic time stronger. And within the space that I'm focusing on, Jim, that I hope that as we're going through all the changes that we're going through, that the diversity, inclusion, and equity agenda that continues to be important from a business standpoint does not go back. And that's one thing that I'm worried about.
Are you hopeful, Antonio?
I'm always hopeful. I'm a very positive person because I fundamentally believe that as individuals, we can make a difference. I mean, I've been in situations like that on deep macroeconomic issues, just like you have. We know exactly what we need to do. So yes, I am hopeful. And by the way, I happen to think that the crop of marketers that we have in our industry, or CMOs that we have in our industry, is a highly capable group of individuals.
Yeah, if I use this podcast as any evidence of that, I talk to one every week and they are amazing people, almost without an exception. In different ways, of course, but amazing people.
That's right.
So listen, I've taken you into some thoughtful questions. I'll leave it to you. Anything for me, Antonio, before we leave?
Jim, I feel deeply honored to know that although you and I do not connect very much, we are committed to the same causes. We've chosen different turfs for them. I just wish that we had more time together, and that maybe we pick one initiative in 2023 and work at it together. Just having the opportunity to bounce ideas for you, going back to your original questions of what do I miss, that would be a blessing for me. That would be something that I would enjoy and cherish.
We can make that happen, Antonio.
So let's do it.
Let's do it. There you go. Public commitment here in the CMO podcast, as it should be. Antonio, thank you for this conversation. And it's so good to see you and chat with you. It's been way too long, and this has been very renewing.
Yeah, same to me. Always. And anyway, let's have a great 2023, and let's figure out how we work something big together.
It's a deal. That was my conversation with Antonio Luzio. Three takeaways from this one for your life, brand, and business. The first one, I love this, Antonio's four most important characteristics of a CMO in 2023. Business first, marketing second, Renaissance person, global mindset, and resilience. I can't argue with that. Those are the four things that are so powerful and so important for every CMO today. Second takeaway, the importance of having a community and mentors outside your company. Antonio reflected honestly that he did not build this as he was rising up in corporate jobs. And when he discovered that and started building community and mentors outside the company, his job became richer and he became a better leader. Third takeaway, when I asked Antonio what advice he would give his younger self, he was very quick to say, trust yourself more and take care of yourself.
That's it for this episode of the CMO Podcast. If you found this helpful and entertaining, I would be so grateful if you could share our show with your friends. And I would be super happy if you subscribed so you can be updated as we publish new episodes. And if you really want to help, leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The CMO Podcast is a Gallery Media Group original production.